Chapter 46. New York, September 1986. Alice had been tired when I left her at the apartment. She had tried to insist that I stay longer, but the concern in Julie's expression had told me that there had been enough talking for the day. When I returned to the East Village, there was a message at reception for me from Oliver, which the desk clerk had transcribed for me. "Kate, I hope all is going well. I am thinking of you. Oh." It wasn't much. It had the inevitable dislocation of any message sent via a third party, like a card written in a florist's hand. But it was enough to lift my spirits. Surely, I thought, this meant that he did not regret what had happened. I had planned to stay at the hotel and while away the rest of the afternoon, but the silence and smallness of my room oppressed me. I wandered out onto the street and then along Broadway, hardly aware of where I was headed, but enjoying for the first time the noise and chaos of the city, the purposeful, if directionless, sense of moving forward through the fray. At one point, I looked about me and realized I was completely lost, though I was strangely unworried by it. I would keep going, I decided, and something must eventually reveal itself to me. I didn't feel like turning back, anyhow. I came to a huge roundabout, followed it round, and kept walking. Suddenly, I glanced to my left and saw, across the lanes of traffic, a building I recognized. The lofty, graceful arches that formed the front, the windows with their geometrical leading, these were as images remembered from a dream. I had a fleeting impression of snow falling thick and silent from the night sky, thicker than I had ever seen it in England, and a white carpet already formed on the pavement, squeaking beneath my booted feet. A memory of light blazing through those tall windows as though a giant fire had been lit within. And I saw Mum, her dark hair drawn back into a chignon, and a soft grey shawl wrapped about her. As I drew this image towards me, I could even detect the perfume she wore. Rich, powdery, enigmatic. It was a scent that I would forever associate with Mum's evening self, clad in one of her many black simple dresses, poised and delicately beautiful, but not without a particular emanation of strength. I grasped for the tail of the memory, tried to force it to reveal itself. Then I saw a sign that had been strung up, and I understood. It was the Metropolitan Opera. The night, I recalled, was the first evening of the Royal Ballet Tour, a series of short, radically experimental, different parts that Mum had choreographed. Now I could remember her apprehension and excitement. She had been uncharacteristically nervy and breathless, almost childlike. It was a big gig for her and, I have heard it suggested, the one that cemented her reputation as more than just an exceptional dancer. At the time, I had been too young to recognize it, but now I understood how much courage it must have taken. Mum could have quite easily have rested on her laurels. She had made more money in her years as prima, she had said once, than was quite sensible. Then I thought of Alice, remaining in Paris despite all that called her away. Alice's was a different manifestation of bravery, certainly, a more momentous, newsworthy sort. Nevertheless, it was of the same stock. I knew innately that Mum would have stayed too. I saw in that instant how like one another they were, how steadfast in their ways, even to a fault. Would I have stayed? I did not want to examine it too closely. On the far side of the road stood a mother and her small daughter, looking up like me at the building. I blinked at them stupidly, wondering if this too was an illusion born from memory. But no, this was real. They were part of a crowd of people, in truth, but they were the only ones I saw. The child spoke, and the mother bent down to hear. As surreptitiously as I could, I took my camera from my bag and framed the shot.